Well, just over this past week, obviously there's a lot of conflicting factors we have to think about now. And I'll start with the data, because the data is still showing that most major economies are running into this very difficult period with a burst of strong growth. And so we can see it in the US economic data that came out last week. For example, the lag indicators such as non-farm payrolls. Non-farm payrolls were very strong for the most recent month. That was the month of February. They lifted by 654,000. The market was looking for 450,000. That comes up to 448,000 the month before. And the unemployment rate has come down 0.2, down to 3.8% from 4. Because of some of the quirks in the way in which pay goes through, there was a slight pause in the rush up in average hourly earnings. Average hourly earnings were actually flat for the month, but that was still only brought back the annual rate of average hourly earnings growth to 5.1% from 5.5%. So before we look at anything else that's affecting inflation, we've got a very, very tight labour market. We've got wages which are running over 5% year on year. That's more than enough in normal circumstances to have the Federal Reserve thinking about certainly starting to lift interest rates, and even more so given that their current Fed funds rate is stuck in a range between 0 and 0.25%. So it's ultra low in very high inflationary conditions. The lead indicators out in the US, they're a bit mixed. We had one of the regional ones from the Chicago area for the month of February. Their Purchasing Managers Index actually came down to 56.3, but it was very elevated the month before at 65.2. The general February manufacturing ISM survey, though, which covers the entire country, actually lifted a little to 58.6 from 57.6. So that's still suggesting that the manufacturing sector is going great guns in the United States and will continue to do so in the near term. The services sector, just pulling back a little bit in terms of the ISM reading for that, came down to 56.5. 59.9, but mid-50s is still a very, very strong reading. So if you're just looking at the economic data, the US economy is motoring along pretty well. It's got a lot of strength running through the labour market, and it's still got these underpinnings for higher inflation. And of course, it's higher inflation is one of the consequences of the conflict in the Ukraine. Some of the economic issues that will be coming out of there, well, there are several, the first of all is when you issue the sorts of sanctions that the Western countries are issuing against Russia, that economy is going to come down. You get some risks, downside risks to global economic growth. But at the same time, there's some fairly powerful inflation factors which are going to come out of those sanctions as well. And effectively, with the war in Ukraine, we're compromising a great proportion of the world's wheat production, for example. So you've got potential rise there, substantial rise coming through grain prices as we march ahead. At the same time, you've got the problem with energy prices, and that is going to present quite a lift in terms of both oil prices, petrol prices, gas prices, and dare I say it, that filthiest of energy, the coal prices. And coal prices have had a real surge off the back of what's happening running through the Ukraine. So we tend to get these additional inflation factors, and it's difficult to determine how long they're going to persist in the system too. That comes down to, how long's the Ukraine conflict going to last? Will it spread? All I can say about that sensibly, I think, at this point is that it does appear to be devolving in the Ukraine into guerrilla warfare in the urban centres. The Russians haven't tried to move into the middle of the big urban centres yet, but as they do, what we're seeing is they're going to get very bogged down. And this is a nightmare for a modern military force when you face guerrilla tactics on a wide-scale basis in areas. So you you just can't sort of overcome that to some degree. And so that's where, you know, this conflict looks as if it's going to get very bogged down and very prolonged. And so the economic issues that we see with this conflict are going to be pretty persistent. And that's something that central banks are going to have to take into account. Yes, they might be frightened that we're going to see some pullback running through economic activity, but they've also got another factor which is adding to supply chain problems, is adding to inflation pressure. And it's inflation numbers that we'll see coming out of the US this week on Thursday. On Thursday this week, we get the February CPI reading out of the United States, and it looks as if the headline CPI, according to market expectations, will be up in the month by 0.8%. That compares with 0.6% month before. If that's where it comes in, the annual inflation rate, CPI inflation rate in the United States, lifts to 7.9% from 7.5%. Every month we say it's running up to new 40-year plus highs. Well, it's going to do it again when we see the number coming out on Thursday. The core CPI, the market thinks that might be around 0.5%. It was 0.6% going back to the month of January. We're hovering in that 5.9, 6% year-on-year range. It was at 6 going back to January. If we get a 0.5, it'll just end slightly to 5.9. But remember that the Fed's target for inflation over time is 2. We're miles ahead of this with no prospect of it really coming down for the time being. Later this year, yeah, we will get some pullback in those annual rates because what we're hoping to see is that some of those goods prices, which have contributed most to the annual inflation rate with the supply chain problems over this past few months, some of those either flatten out or even go into reverse. So they've contributed about half the annual rate of inflation that we're seeing at the moment. If you take that half out, then maybe you come back into the threes for the inflation rates, both the core and the CPI, a bit above. But that's still a full percentage point above where the Fed's target is. And then, of course, we get a further rise in inflation with the problems we're getting now as we go into 2023 and 2024. So it's these sorts of issues which the Fed still has to have at the back of its mind. And not this week, but the following week, we have the Fed meeting. So we have the policy meeting where it's still more than likely that, notwithstanding the war in Ukraine, they're going to have to think about the first interest rate hike. Just looking elsewhere internationally, some of the effects. In China last week, interestingly, we got a lot of lead indicators out of China last week. These are all purchasing managers' indices for the manufacturing sector, the services sector, both the official ones and the private sector ones produced by Caixin. And they all ended up a little bit better than expected. So the Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index lifted from 50.1 to 50.2. That's not a lot to write home about, but the market was fearing it was going to come back to 49.9. The services sector PMI went from 51.1 to 51.6. And the Caixin Manufacturing PMI, which we thought was getting lodged in the 49s, in other words, just below the expansion contraction territory, has actually lifted from 49.1 to 50.4. And the Caixin services sector PMI, that was one which did actually come back a bit more. It came back to 50.2 from 51.4. The other factor out of China is, you know, we're running into the big meetings that they're having in China at the moment. They're talking about some longer-term economic growth rate in China, which is now in the mid-4s. So it's a long way down from where we're used to having Chinese growth. But one interesting factor in China is that they are talking about a large lift in military spending. That's not something we should necessarily be alarmed about. It's something which is going to be quite general around the world. So one of the consequences of the Ukraine conflict, and we'll see it in our own budget when their own budget comes down at the end of March, one of the item lines which is going to go up substantially in terms of spending will be military spending. It'll be the same for the US, and it will certainly be the same for the US, for Europe. Indeed, you know, Germany is talking about a large lift in military spending. Now, this is on top of any changes which governments may need to make to try and assist lower income groups in their various countries to cope with some of the key price changes which are going to occur out of the Ukraine war. And it's food and energy prices which are going up. That hits the poorest groups in most countries very, very hard. The IMF's just come out with a report, and it's very strongly indicating that, you know, governments have to look at how they can subsidise the poorer people in their various economies. That's going to certainly be there in many of the budgets that we see coming forward. So that theme of governments being more relaxed about spending more in budgets, even when they've already got very big budget deficits, not going away. If anything, it's got this further boost which has come through from the sorts of circumstances we've got at the moment. So that's another factor which is going to keep aggregate demand pretty much supported in many countries around the world. And another one of those factors which means that it's not temporary. The inflation problem we've got is going to be pretty persistent. And so even if central banks take a slower march against inflation in the near term, they can't hold that for very long. They've got to start to get on top of the inflation problem. This week in China, we get some export data and import data. These have been one of the areas which have been holding up China's growth rate with the strength in global economic activity. So going back to January, the exports are up 20.9% year on year. There may be a bit of fade on that, back to about 15%, but still essentially pretty strong. And the import side is quite strong too, at 19.5% going back to January, probably around the 16.5% when that comes out for the month of February. We also get some inflation data out of China, and China's a little bit of an odd man out when it comes to retail price inflation. CPI inflation, because the economy has been slowing there, has kept a cap on things, and the type of food items which have been going up strongly in price are not those which are staples as far as Chinese are concerned. So the rice price has actually been holding pretty much down most of the way through this very large lift we've seen in other commodity prices. So the February CPI, if anything, is going to edge back a bit, probably to 0.8% year on year from 0.9% going back the month before. We also get producer prices and factory gate prices out of China, just coming back a bit to 8.7%, we think, from 9.1%, but still actually quite high. Then we move to Australia. And the interesting part is that going backwards, we had Q4 GDP came out, much stronger result than the market expected. This is at a time when you had New South Wales and Victoria only just coming out of some of those huge restrictions, but they spent up a storm, and particularly households, so household consumption expenditure was up over 6% quarter on quarter in real terms, and that drove most of the huge GDP growth rate, which was 3.4% quarter on quarter. That's the single strongest quarterly GDP growth rate for Australia since early 1976. So you have to go back a very long way to find anything as strong as that for Australia. The year-on-year GDP growth rate actually accelerated to 4.2% year-on-year, from 4% year-on-year, going back to Q3. Now, remembering that the long-term trend growth rate for Australia is about 2.5. So we're running a full 1.7 percentage points above the long-term trend growth rate. So that's what's in the system and what we're coming off. Just inside the GDP read too, some of the other features which give you an idea of what's happening inside the economy. As we get out of COVID problems, so when we get past COVID waves, there's no problem with households spending up again. And we saw it in the GDP where the household savings ratio, which going back to Q3 was knocking on the door at 21%, was huge. Dropped about 6 percentage points, and we're back to about 15%. The long-term average for the household savings ratio is a little bit under 5%. So we've still got a lot of embedded savings which can still come out in spending on any lift in confidence as we go forward. We also had a bit of January data came out, and as far as retail sales were concerned, we got a very big bounce, 1.8% month on month. The market was looking for only 0.4%, so that was strong. There was a bit of an exception to this with the home building approvals. Home building approvals had quite a slump for the month of January. They fell by 27.9% in the month. So there was quite a pullback in that. That was after they'd risen 9.8%. Essentially, we're getting a lot of volatility running through the home building approvals at the moment. We also had surprisingly strong trade surplus again. Our exports lifted by 8% month on month in the month of January alone. Imports actually fell by 2%. So as a result of that, our trade surplus for the month lifted to $12.9 billion. That's almost a record for the month, from $8.4 billion. And much of it's in the bulks. So we're seeing strength running through iron ore, a lot of strength running through coal. And this is the backhanded benefit in some ways that comes to Australia. It is a very nasty backhanded benefit from the war in Ukraine. Literally, grain prices are on a rocket ship at the moment. So particularly wheat. So wheat prices very, very strong. Not far behind them, energy prices. Energy prices are soaring. So it's very strong price increases running through for export gas prices out of Australia and all forms of coal. So coal prices are roaring at the moment. As are energy prices in general. So we're getting a very backhanded, huge lift in our national income at a time when already, you know, we had strong employment growth, which is lifting incomes. So this is where Australia is a little bit of an odd man out. Where you see it most distinctly is obviously in the exchange rate. So the exchange rate has moved up a fair way over this past week or two. We're now above 73 cents US against the US, but at the same time, we're a long way up against those countries which are worst hit by the uncertainty in Europe, and of course amongst that's the euro. So we've had a very sharp surge running against the euro, against the Japanese yen, against many of the third currencies as well. So we're seeing this large-scale strength. Now, this paints a really almost tricky picture as far as the Reserve Bank's concerned, because we're going to get a fair bit more inflation pressure coming through here in Australia. So the numbers are going to look pretty ugly over the course of the next quarter or two in terms of being well above 4% year on year for the CPI and the underlying inflation rate soaring well into the threes. Yet at the same time, there's some discrete tightening of monetary conditions by the strengthening of the Australian dollar. There's the uncertainty about global growth that comes through from the sanctions and everything else that might just temper things a little bit in terms of global economic activity. So it's a real witch's brew as far as the Reserve Bank's concerned and what you should do about that. All I would say is I think the inflation pressures look way more persistent than anything else. And so that's where the Reserve Bank, and we'll hear from the Reserve Bank governor this week, he's speaking twice this week, once about the impact of the war in Ukraine on a panel that he's talking to. So we'll hear roughly what his thinking is through the course of this week. But you know, he'll have to admit that, you know, the economy is going really well at the moment in terms of strength. So I still think that we're sort of on track for a first interest rate hike at some point later. Probably still an August date, still seems most likely for the first one. I doubt that it's going to be made because of the conflict in the Ukraine at the moment. Then moving to Europe, and Europe, of course, right in the eye of this, both the inflation pressure and the risks that run out of the Ukraine. So we had their February CPI came out in Europe last week. It rose more than expected. It's up at 5.8% from 5.1%. The core CPI, the high cap core, ran up from 2.4% to 2.9%, again above expectations. But the truly frightening one are the factory gate prices out of Europe, the producer price index. In January, in 1 month alone, producer prices lifted 5.2% month on month. So as a result of that, annual producer prices have run up to 30.6% year on year from 26.3% year on year. That's what's in the pipeline. And we haven't seen inflation in the pipeline of that order any time over, well, not even during World War II. So this is unprecedented. Rises now running through producer prices in Europe. You've had pockets of hyperinflation, obviously, in the past in Europe, but never generally across the entire continent in the way in which it's rising at the moment. So, yeah, what does a central bank do about that? They can see massive inflation coming their way, and it's going to get worse because of the conflict. So at some point, ECB has to change its spots, and I fear it's going to be a shock to markets when it does it, but we'll wait and see when that happens. The other factor, the European economy is really going very, very strongly. So we had the January unemployment rate came out. It fell to 6.8% from 7%, and that may seem a very high unemployment rate by our standards. That's actually the lowest unemployment rate since the euro commenced, going back to 1999. So very tight labour markets, particularly tight in Germany, where you're running 3% and under for the unemployment rate. I suppose it's one of those things where you always look for what's being wrongly priced. And yeah, the market really took a caning to the German equity market over the course of this past week, you know, for fairly obvious reasons because of the problems that are developing there in the Ukraine. But it was one of the cheaper equity markets before this happened. The economy is going unbelievably well. So it's one of those interesting ones that if you got any surprise settlement at all, that's the market that's going to soar. It's one of those markets where almost you'd be taking some sort of opportunity to have just a small allocation to it in case something goes right, because that will be the market that would take off on the back of that. But this week in Europe, we've got the Centix Investor Confidence Survey coming out. It's probably going to come back quite a way, yeah, because of the war. So they're looking at 5.3 from 16.6. Then Thursday, the ECB meeting. We've got a lot of central banks actually meeting over the next fortnight or so. But the ECB one, I think, is going to be one of the more interesting ones. Yeah, their cash rate, one of their parts of their cash rate, the deposit rate, is still at minus 0.5%. Remember that 30.6% increase in producer prices, 5.8% in the CPI, all heading higher. This is complete and utter nonsense and has to break at some point. And they haven't given themselves the luxury of just edging the market with, you know, here the Reserve Bank, you know, the Reserve Bank governor's been changing his rhetoric every single month. So that now it's, you know, fairly clear that he's talking towards, you know, prepare for an interest rate hike. We're still being patient, but it's not quite yet. We haven't had that in Europe. It's just going to come as a complete bolt out the blue when they panic into doing something about the inflation that's facing them. So that's the one which I worry about as a surprise that can come from stage left at some point. I'm not sure whether it's going to be this Thursday, but some Thursday, a meeting in the next few months, it will come. And so just watching those circumstances as we march ahead.